Hey, this is Ollie. Welcome to The Meta Project. This podcast has been built to intelligently upgrade how you look and feel so your body never holds you back. I want to help uncover some of the core concepts, beliefs, and frameworks that we've used with hundreds of clients to become industry leaders in mind and body. If you want to transform your body, upgrade your energy, and dive deeper into understanding long-term health and performance, then this podcast is for you. I hope you get a ton of value out of these and subscribe.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Wildcast. I'm your host, Calvin Coyles. I'm joined by the incredible Ollie Wood from The Meta Project. He is a wellness coach. He's also a peak performance advisor. And we're going to be able to dive deep into not only mental, but physical performance today. And how do you get the most out of your life in every single aspect of it as well? Ollie, thank you for joining us from New Zealand. We appreciate it deeply. How have you been today?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Calvin. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome, mate. Well, look, let's jump straight into it. Tell me a little bit about your background and how you came to create the Meta Project and what does that look like? Give the audience a bit of a history and a short story of Ollie Wood.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for me, I started off, I actually came down to Wellington where I'm living now for a corporate commerce degree and diving into that business space. But I found myself in the sort of one-on-one personal training environment, a big box gym pretty quickly. And for me, that became moving away from business and more towards the personal training quite quickly. I needed to make sure that I kept that same focus on self-development and making sure that if I was going to do this rather than the corporate side of things, I was going to be the best of the best, right? Yep. And diving into that, I focused on the training standpoint, as every young aspiring PT does at 19, you know, going through that process of just optimizing training, right? There's not a particularly huge amount of stress. Your nutrition is kind of what your nutrition is, and you don't seem to have any issues because you're not aware of it. But then you just maximize training to ultimately feel like you're a good coach. Now, as you start to work with more and more clients and you dive deeper into this understanding of how the human body works, and you're working with high-level execs, you're working with business owners that are walking through the door with that amount of stress, you realize that you can optimize every aspect of a progression in training, but you're not taking into account the bigger picture of how are we going to make sure they get the most out of their body? How are they going to stay sharp and on point all day? And that's when we start to really dive deep and, oh, I'm missing a big part of this equation, right? I'm optimizing training. I'm coaching PTs around the country on how to optimize the way they're moving. And none of it matters because nobody's got the ability to actually respond or get the most out of their training. So as we dive deeper and deeper into that, I was going through or starting to see that these issues were changing for myself as well. You know, you're training really well. You're eating the foods that you thought were healthy, right? And you're noticing you're getting more inflamed. You're noticing that you have digestive distress. You're not sleeping through the night. And as you start to get away from this uni student with no stress into a high level, you know, busy environment where stress and sleep is all becoming an issue, if you're managing relationships and family on the side, then, you know, how much more are we going to take on as a full picture? We start to realize that training component, although helpful, we need to really look at the sweet spot of how we can build that body back up. So that was really just a, you know, headbutt after headbutt of trying to understand how this approach really worked and diving deeper into the bigger conversation of health. Now, I took 10 years to optimize training, right? So if I was going to do the same for sleep, for mindset, for that nutrition component, that was going to take a lot of time. And taking the time to build up, you know, investing in coaches, doing all the great stuff to really be in the trenches rather than just in the textbooks of what that actually looked like in the day-to-day space. But obviously where we've headed in the Meta Project now is actually a culmination of, okay, we've got that mindset specialist, we've got that nutritionist, we've got the exercise specialist, and we can dive into sleep and that lifestyle design, right? So it's no longer one person in isolation doing training over here, and then we've got nutrition or whatever other components of life we're looking at, right? Business coach. Taking the time to actually integrate that into, if we can improve how we're eating and how we're training to optimize how we show up in the day, all of that ultimately is going to become an integrated path to your health approach. And it just becomes a much bigger conversation that allows us to work with our body rather than against it. And I think that's a change we're trying to make, where if someone's trying to get their body back on their side, especially as males, we dive in, we're like, right, this is going to be hard workouts, this is going to be eating the leaves and walnuts and taking the time to suffer through that process rather than really working with your body. And I think that's a big shift that we're trying to make is, yes, you need to get out of your comfort zone. Yes, you need to want that change, but it doesn't have to be working harder. And a lot of time we're actually working against our body and not getting the results from the effort we're putting in.
Yeah, that's huge. I can completely resonate with everything you just mentioned there. I think that's fantastic. Talk to me a little bit about that concept of working with your body. I think that's probably a good place for us to start, right? Because, you know, we've got a lot of clients, as I'm sure you've had as well, Ollie, where, you know, there's a fine line between listening intuitively to what your body needs in this moment and listening to the ego or the self-saboteur in us that says sleep in, have that piece of cake, you know, you deserve a treat, something on those lines, right? So how do you differentiate between what the body is genuinely yearning for that's going to aid and improve in whether that be rest, recovery, performance, whatever it might be, as opposed to sinking back into patterns and habits of self-sabotage that, you know, that that prioritize comfort over progress?
Yeah, fantastic question. It's a case of diving into do you really want this, and is it comfort that is holding us back, or is it discomfort? And a lot of the time, most people are in that space of a comfort-based life, right? We're in the instant gratification of microwave culture, right? Everything's just there right now. So taking the time to work into some sort of delayed gratification of how are we going to focus on the lead and lag indicators and making sure that the 10 kilos doesn't happen closer if we just look at it. We've got to make sure we've got some steps in place and we're actually looking at it as being applicable. But I think there's a big difference between the people we're working with in regards to I'm already exercising, or I'm pushing the business really hard, my body's not working like it used to. So that conversation has already started from someone that's getting off their ass and making something happen.
Yeah.
Not me making sure that, okay, what's going to be different than 20 years ago when we were just seeing those changes happen when we went for a run, right? So if we are seeing that we're in that space of comfort being the first roadblock, I think, again, it's just a case of breaking that down, because the reason you're not taking that first step is it looks really scary, it looks really hard, and we don't talk about training till week three because there's so much more that we need to have a conversation around to make sure your body's actually feeling energetic, you're having a good night's sleep. And if you thought that your energy was at an eight, and we realize that once we strip a couple of things back, we get the building things back up, and we realize you're at a two, then having that conversation around exercise starts to become a bit more enjoyable because we've built you back up to a point where you feel athletic or enjoyable.
Yeah, sure. So talk to me about the full ecosystem here in terms of when you're working with a client, what are the key pillars that you're looking for in terms of to establish a baseline with, and then obviously to start to manipulate to improve personal performance? What does that look like?
Yeah, because you've got so much to work with, right? We're looking at sleep, we're looking at training, we're looking at stress, we're looking at lifestyle, and looking at a person's workday and how it's actually going to integrate into every day is the biggest part that most people miss, right? No workout plan is the perfect workout plan if we don't have the time to do it. So fitting that back into our day is going to come into what we look at as three core stresses, right? So everyone knows that stress is going to be an issue. Stress is something that's impacting their ability to digest food or just get the results from the exercise. But if we can break it down into three areas, we can start to get an idea of, for Calvin, what is the main stress that we need to address first and how do we build from there, right? So the first one we're going to be looking at is that psychological stress. What's coming through where work's really busy, where family life, I know you've got a new baby there, so you know there's a lot happening with just that mental chatter. Is there an argument happening at the dinner table? Is there a massive project that's running behind? And noticing that mental stress is going to be taken in the body just as the same as physical, we realize we're getting the cortisol response. We realize that sugars are not working as well in the body. There's a lot more muscle breakdown. So just taking that small step to realize that your mental stress is going to be inhibiting your recovery just as much as the physical stuff allows us to get an idea of where we are in that mental space and making sure that we are being mindful at some level. Because as you know, especially in the corporate world, most men are just heads on top of a meat suit, right? They're just not connected at all. And taking the time to just tune into that a little bit does not mean going slower, but it does mean taking the time to sharpen the axe a little bit. So that's the first one. Second one, we're diving into physical. That's really going to come quite simply into two different areas. Are we not training at all, and where do we take the first step? And is that because of injury or movement or whatever? Or is it a case of we're training too much because we're finding that we're trying to train like we used to when we were 20. We're trying to continue doing the runs harder and faster than we used to, rather than making some adjustments towards new types of movement that works for us, you know, later in life, 30s, 40s, 50s, because it will be different. So having that conversation around your sweet spot of training allows us to get an idea of maybe stepping back on the cardio a little bit, making sure we're looking at strengthening and balancing that body out a little bit, and just building up an awareness of how is training, again, building you up, not breaking you down. So when you finish a workout, you actually feel like you're energized, you're in a space to make most of the day, rather than feeling like you're fatigued and flat and you need another coffee. Right.
Yeah.
So that's the main ones. We look at psychological, we look at physical. We can get an idea of those two coming through. But I think the third one that's missed out of that space is really starting to lean a little bit deeper into digestive, right? So it's not a case of eating less to drop body fat, right? If that was that easy, we would be in a space of calorie counters actually doing their job more than 4 weeks, right? Taking the time to actually break that body down or break the body fat down and be in a space where we can still be highly effective at work. That's the one that a lot of people worry about, right? Is making sure that we can drop body fat without feeling feeling fatigued without feeling flat all day. And I think the biggest conversation that's being missed, and this is why, especially as we get older, this starts to become more important, is front-loading that health base so we actually feel like we're functioning well before we start looking or having that conversation around dropping food down. Because a lot of the time we're running on fumes, we're not eating the right foods, we're not fueling the body in the right space, that if we just go and drop calories from there, well, we don't have an engine to run on, right? So if we can take it from our little 1.6 engine up back up to the V8 that it used to feel like, we can take the time to actually use that fuel properly. And we see this time and time again. We're actually giving the body, we're giving clients more food, we're giving more variety through that day, we're enjoying meals again, and they're dropping body fat, even though they're eating double what they used to. And it just comes back down to having that conversation of what are the best foods that you should be eating? What are the foods that are causing you to feel inflamed, bloated, tired, not allowing you to sleep properly? And that can really start to look at building the body back up, having an engine to work with that's actually functioning.
Yeah, wow, fantastic. I love all of those things. I think that's fantastic. I was going to ask if the psychological stress, what's the maximum score I can give myself on that chart just when I'm doing it, when I'm writing my notes myself? It's so true. You know, I think nothing happens by accident, right? So although I didn't know that we had this appointment booked in last week because I've just been in the trenches, I woke up on Tuesday morning with the intention of going to the gym. And I've been, you know, trying to get to the gym as early as I can to get the day done. And, you know, obviously family life, everything else has just been difficult. But I was like, fuck Tuesday. I was like, I don't want to go to the gym. I know that if I go to the gym right now, I'm just further taking myself back out. I'm taking myself out of that space. I'm going to be cooked for the rest of the day. And so, okay, what does my body need right now? And so I decided instead to go to a walk. I went down to the beach. I had a swim. I've been doing that every day since. And that's been fantastic. It's restorative, right? It you feel better as the end of that. Now, can I train in the afternoon or can I get to the beach a little bit earlier and still get a session in? Yes, I can. I think that's important. But the thing that I realized was, you know, so much of, you know, and I'm sure you have some references with regards to how people train, but, you know, so much of training for me had become in many ways taking away from, like, I'm doing this because I need to train in order to drop body fat or to build strength. But when I finish the session, I don't feel uplifted and re-energized. I feel sort of like I've depleted myself in some way, which is probably part of the process. Whereas there's other types of exercises, whether that be competitive sport or swimming, for example, or doing different things, where you finish that exercise and you feel renewed and re-sparked, re-energized, right? So just from an energetic place, it's really interesting to play in that space with people. Tell me, with your work that you do in peak performance and sort of your mental performance, how important it is for people that are normally very high achievers that sort of fit a groove that becomes about efficiency. How important is it to be able to find things that are renewing and re-energizing for them along with just, you know, bench, squat, deadlift, exercise and activities?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a case of looking with what kind of client are you working with, because is it someone that is not training right now, and what are the first steps to get the minimum effective dose and really build you back up? But as I said, it can come from the other end, which is not necessarily you having to run marathons every day, but we might be acting as the brake pedal and really starting to create confinements around, well, what if we did half of that? How could we make this more effective? Or if we were to do the workout in the morning, rather than it being this same thing every day, how do we challenge that belief so it's not just working in a spreadsheet, we are actually bringing in the art or the awareness of what your body actually needs, right? Yeah. So there's a big difference, as you said before, between fatigue and muscle breakdown. If there's some sort of stimulus and response we can grow from, that's great. But if we fell flat as a pancake after workout, then that's not particularly helpful for the rest of the day. Yeah. And knowing that space that we're in, if we're feeling like we're run down, you actually going for that swim instead of doing the leg day might actually be a hell of a lot more beneficial to the long-term response of what you're after, right? Yeah. So we're now working with our body. We've got past that initial conversation of getting out of our comfort zone. I think that's the first step for a lot of us. But if you're now in this idea of I'm feeling flat today, I'm pushing towards trying to improve how I look and feel, but my body's just not on it today. I think having that conversation around I've still got those times booked out for me is the biggest part of that, right? Because you've got our work day, you've got your family day, but if we're not booked in like that work interview or that meeting, then how are we taking the time to actually add us back into our day and have some form of our time? So with that, it's not a case of should we or should we not do it. It's ultimately a case of that non-negotiable is there today regardless, but how does this become a walk or a swim rather than a full-blown gym workout that allows me to still have my time and it still be beneficial? It's a great conversation to have.
Let's get a couple of high-level things for each of those key areas, right? So from a training perspective, if I'm, let's say I'm already doing a bit, what are some things that I can be doing or adding in or taking out that are going to have a dramatic impact on my overall result? How do I get more done in less time?
Yeah. First one, as an overall concept, I think you need to chew on is making sure that as we get older, we don't get better endurance. We just get worse at strength, right? So if you're finding yourself leaning towards more cardio and more cycling, that's not because your body's naturally inclined to go that way. It's because we're losing this ability to rebuild muscle tissue to keep that functional strength there. So making sure, obviously, where that's going is adding in some sort of resistance training. Now, if you're currently already doing that, the big shift that we need to look at is making sure we're looking at muscle, not movement, right? We get used to the bench press, we get used to the squat, but what muscles are actually contracting in that motion? Because how you and I move in that movement is going to be entirely different. And if you have this conversation, you're aware of how that looks when you're moving, you're already going to be ahead of 90% of the PTs or so-called professionals in the gym, because we're no longer counting 10 reps just because the bar's going away and coming towards. We're understanding what that muscle is actually doing. And when we start to go into a gym, we start to feel a lot more, or if we're training from home, taking the time to feel a lot more confident about how your body moves rather than to feel like you have to fit into a machine. And I think that's where this conversation of strengthening muscles rather than damaging joints allows it to be a lot more long-term focused, because we're not feeling beaten up at the end of the workout. We're actually feeling like the body's feeling strong and stable after a workout. So 100%. Looking at that can be a big topic to go down into, but an awareness of what your body's doing rather than just doing a bench press allows you to look at being more effective with your time and being able to, if you're contracting muscles, you're now making sure 100% of that tension's on your chest, not on your shoulders, elbows, and wrists, that you can make it a 20-minute workout and make it more effective than your 40. And I think that minimum effective dose conversation allows you to laser in on stimulus, not stress.
100%. Same question from a diet perspective. What are the do's and don'ts there? What do people need to change and adjust or add in?
Yeah, from a psychological and digestive one, put that together slightly, is the biggest thing you can do is take 5 or 6 deep breaths before each meal, right? All of us are in such a hyper-ventilating state before meals or through the day, and getting an awareness of bringing that stress down overall will be helpful, right? We have that simple trigger. That ability to control the autonomic nervous system is going to be one of the biggest skills that you can do to improve your digestive system. That's how we're going to tie those together a little bit, but taking the time to look at that, you'll start to realize that, I feel fine, I'm ready to eat. I take five or six deep breaths, and my shoulders drop 3 inches, right? Taking the time to just release that stress and get ourselves back into that rest and digest response will allow 80% of our blood to pull more towards our digestive tract rather than all being in our muscles and all tight, ready to fight. That'll make a significant difference to actually digesting the food, breaking it down, and being able to utilize what's there. And I think that's a significant difference. You can have your lovely chicken salad in front of you, but if you're inhaling it while you're trying to finish some emails, it's completely changed your ability to digest or actually use that food. So a simple concept to keep in mind there is we're looking at it's not what you eat, it's what you absorb. And that allows us to have a bigger conversation of controlling that autonomic nervous system, taking the time to be aware of that will make a significant difference, even if the food on our plate is no different.
Yeah, wow, I love that. I was writing that down. It's not what you eat, it's what you absorb. Excellent. And then from a sleep perspective, I've got an Oura Ring, but I imagine most people listening to it won't. I love it. I think it's fantastic in terms of the data as well. Although admittedly, I'll be honest with you, Ollie, when I'm looking at the data in the morning, other than the score it tells me and I just go based off the score, I don't really know how to read it that well or effectively. So if you do have an Oura Ring, or if I'm looking at mine, for example, what are the things that I should be looking for in terms of markers for health and longevity and that I've actually slept well and I'm ready for a big day, other than it just telling me I got a good score the night before?
Yeah. A Oura Ring is a fantastic option. Obviously, the Whoop Band's quite close up to that one as well.
I got both, actually. I just don't wear the Whoop Band.
Yeah, fantastic. I've got my active for the actual gym stuff, and I've got the Oura for the actual sleep. And I think that's the conversation that I really feel aligned with on the Oura side, is because we're talking about recovery in order to work better rather than train really hard and then think about recovery as an afterthought. And I think having that conversation of the yin and the yang, if we think about it, most people are getting up with coffee and then down with alcohol, and then the spiral's just continuing, rather than naturally having that energy in the morning and then feeling like we can wind down through our own internal control, right? We're always seeking that external space. That can be a whole nother conversation, but taking the time to look at that ability to manage our recovery and look at, the best professionals in the world in any sport aren't the ones that simply train harder. They're the ones that know how to recover better, right? And it's looking at just those small things in the day that do make that big difference. And outside of that awareness of things like breath, things like controlling the nervous system is going to be step number one, because your ability to manage that high cortisol through the day and bring that down is going to have a direct correlation with your ability to secrete melatonin, right? If you're stressed out all day and you've got that cortisol through the roof, your ability to actually secrete melatonin in the day naturally is going to be far lower, right? So your ability to actually get deep REM and deep sleep is going to be significantly different. The other part there is on that digestive front. If you're noticing that we're constantly having the fast food and having the high vegetable oils and refined sugars, and we're really starting to create a dysbiosis in our gut, that's going to have a significant impact on our mood, our serotonin levels. We know that 90% of that is in our gut to start with, and your serotonin needs to be converted into melatonin to actually have a deep night's sleep. So they're directly correlated there anyway. So it really does start to pull back to that gut base as being a huge base there. But so really a lot of those is often you're going to, all of these other components are going to improve your sleep, right? We can't sleep harder. We can't focus on sleeping harder. We have to focus on the things in the day that are going to ultimately improve it. Now, we know that dropping body fat, a narrower neck girth is all going to make a significant difference. But if we're inflamed, if we're eating these foods that we don't feel good on, we're not taking care of that digestive space, our breathing is going to be inhibited, our stress is going to be higher, and our ability to actually sleep, obviously, I'd say about 40%, or I'd say that the research shows that at least 40% of men above 40 have some level of sleep apnea, right? So that's going to have a significant impact on our ability to breathe clearly through the night. And the only way to improve that, again, is not by focusing on the night, it's by managing it during the day and being aware of those signs and signals to bring that down into a rest and digest space. So it all ties in together. And I think that's where now sleep is such a hard topic to look at, because it's no longer a pill before sleep or narrowly looking at sleep. It's all of these other parts of the equation that allows us to have better sleep.
Yeah, fantastic. Love that. What, other than a couple of deep breaths before eating, which is actually very profound and very, very effective, what are some things that you find that help clients best manage stress? And I know for a lot of high achievers, you know, anything that we can do to get that extra kick is normally where people go to, right? So it might start with coffee and then it becomes a variety of other things during the day. But from an ideal intake of caffeine, what's the maximum someone should be having in a day to be able to get through the day effectively without damaging or deteriorating their sleep at the end of the day?
I think that's a bigger conversation, because you look at this awareness of caffeine, we could say 0, 1, 2 could be great, right? When we start to get to the 8 and 10, we know that's an issue. So I think that's nothing new, is getting an awareness of things like breath, things like a walk, things like nature are all going to be fantastic signals just to ground yourself and get it back into a space of slowing down and being aware of where we are. We live in such a fast-paced life. We're battling that the entire time. But I think what makes that worse, our classic sort of quote we use in our group all the time is, don't choose the next Ironman to run away from that conversation you know you should be having, right? And it's taking the time that everybody's looking for the next challenge, then looking for the next whatever, if it needs to be an Ironman, right? But the amount of times that we sometimes, and I've been in this space too, is we use exercise as an outlet to replace the alcohol or to replace that addiction of some sort. But the main problem at hand is that we are not facing the conversation internally we need to have.
Yeah.
And I think the big part of that, when we're looking at health, we're starting to have this conversation of realizing it's something we get to do, not something we have to do. It's something that we do for us, something that we're doing because we love ourselves, because there's a respect for ourselves, rather than trying to hate ourselves into a shape. And when we start that conversation, now we're looking at the bigger picture of, we're not avoiding these things that we may need to have a conversation around, right? And that's where we start to look at a much more therapeutic way of improving our body and our mind in the same process, rather than this being a torture experience, it's an enjoyable experience. And along the lines, we start to realize that we're not relying on alcohol, we're not relying on caffeine, we're not avoiding our partner, right? There's a lot of these conversations that start to unfold because we're looking at the bigger picture of health, which does include human connection.
Yeah, absolutely. From a behavioral change perspective, something that people traditionally struggle with in every area is implementing new habits and routines and rituals. Health and wellness is even harder than most. So what do you find are some of the things that people struggle with, and why is that the case? And then what do you recommend for someone that wants to implement new behavioral changes, whether that be going to the gym, eating better, not drinking as much, whatever it might be? What are the steps that you recommend that you find to be very effective for your clients?
Yeah, well, we all know the person that dropped the 10 kilos and then put it back on, right? And the way we do that is we just need to do a quick Google, and we've now got 30 different options on how we can drop that 10 kilos in 4 weeks. It's not healthy to drop that amount of weight in 4 weeks. And starting to look at that is, again, it's something we're forcing our body to do. We are going through this process of hating ourselves into change rather than making sure it's in a level of enjoying or looking after our body. So of course we put that back on, and it's because we try to do everything all at once, right? We train harder, we eat less, and we forget about the rest to get the short-term results at the expense of the long-term outcome. And I think it just needs to start with a different approach of when we start to look at health as a foundation of making sure this movement happens long-term. We know that when we sleep well and our energy is good and when we're on holiday, we actually find that it's easier to stay in shape, provided the food isn't coming with it, right? It's usually the stress or it's a lack of sleep that it makes us eat a lot more. And we know that we have at least 400 calories extra in a day if we're not getting at least 6 hours of sleep in a row. So looking at this bigger space of, rather than trying to fill that gap of overconsumption, we start to look at how do we make sure the platform is there. Now, that could be simply going for that 20-minute walk in the morning for 2 weeks. Can we manage that, or do we notice that that brings up all the bullshit of the day that we're trying to do before our day starts, right? So an easy way could be, well, let's nail the first 20 minutes a day and build from there. What's that look like as a night routine? Are we winding down properly, or are we glued to a screen for 5 hours and then we pull ourselves into bed? Those are going to have a significant difference on, like, your sleep scores you had on your Oura Ring. If we're not giving ourselves at least 45 minutes to an hour without that blue light, signaling to our brain that it's still the middle of the day, that's going to significantly drop our deep sleep. And I've tested that so many different times that if I don't give myself that full hour, I see at least a 30-minute drop in my deep sleep in the night. Mm-hmm. Now, become in tune enough to know that when I wake up, I know whether I have had enough deep sleep or whether I've had enough REM, to give yourself a little bit more of an awareness of what those really mean. The deep sleep is kind of like your muscle repair system, right? You'll notice that if you've had really, really good deep sleep, you feel like your body feeling refreshed, you're not achy, and you feel like you've recovered from the day before. Now, the REM side of things is when we start to look at that personal sort of psychologist in your head that removes the emotions and allows you to compartmentalize the day's thoughts without the emotion attached. So that allows you to really get up and feel like you're clear-headed, feel sharper, just feel more positive in general. So if we notice that both of those are down, we're going to feel like there's a big shadow over our head all day, right?
Yeah.
And if we can take those little steps, like the managing that natural light and artificial light during the day, looking at and managing the first 20 minutes in the morning, I'm sure that's something that as a business owner, taking the time to bring an awareness to, rather than emails and all the problems of the day, how can we focus on making sure we've got our head on straight before that starts, is going to have significant impact, not just to our performance from a work standpoint, but a significant impact to our ability to be healthy in a general sense, right? We're not going to be as triggered. We're going to digest food better. We're going to recover better and everything else that's a on-floor effect of that.
Yeah, I love that. Fantastic. Absolutely amazing. Tell me, for someone that is that's out there right now that is looking to connect more with you, what's the next steps from this podcast? You've given us a heap of information, or you have. Where do I go and find out more about you? How do I discover a little bit more about the Meta Project and get myself involved in that?
Yeah, well, like we started with this question, it was taking the time to look through what's our first step, right? Because we start to look at trying to put all of it into place at once, rather than just adding in one step, seeing how that feels, adding in the next step, seeing how that feels. And that becomes a process that becomes a lot less daunting when we're looking at health and actually integrating it into an already busy day. Most people, when they're busy, they lean out of health, right? Whereas exactly when you should be leaning in, when things get busier, when they get more stressful, taking the time to lean into making sure we protect those non-negotiables is exactly where that conversation should start. So breaking that down, finding that first habit, allows us to make sure that we're not breaking those habits every time life gets busy, because that just becomes this undulating, I've got my health on track, I've got my health off track all year long, and we never feel like we've got to grasp it. So taking the time to break it down is exactly where we should start. If you want time to compartmentalize that and get an awareness of where that starts for you, we've got a 5-day mini-series that allows you to walk through that process step by step. Going through day one, we didn't even talk about this today, but taking the time to look through, especially male and female side, we know we've got this awareness of menopause. We know that things are responding differently and there's symptoms and all these weird things coming through, and taking control of our body is a big conversation. But the problem on the male side is we've got this little silent killer that most of us aren't aware of. As our body starts to respond differently, we think it's just an accumulation of stress over time. We've got family, but our body's working against us in that same process. And it's something called andropause, which is a very similar to menopause, but it's just slower and more sort of under the radar as we go through.
Right.
We know that there's a natural decline in testosterone. We know that there's a lot of hormone changes happening. And it has a significant difference on our mental well-being, on our recovery, all of those components that are coming through. And if we don't take that as part of the conversation, then we're not taking in into account a very, well, like a huge part of how we feel on a day-to-day basis, which is hormones. Now, we don't go and address hormones directly. We need to make sure this platform is at bay first. So that becomes a big part of actually working with your body, is understanding what's going on. So that's a big part of day one, getting an awareness of what's actually going on, where do I start, and how do I make sure I feel better again? And go through that process of identifying those health anchors, getting an idea of what foods must be part of your diet, and breaking that down into fueling the day rather than starving the day, then looking at sleep, looking at movement, and just breaking it down day by day. So there's a lot in there, but it's built around the same thought process of today's conversation, which is how do we make sure we implement one step at a time and look at this bigger conversation of health rather than narrowly through what most people look at as fitness.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, we'd love to share that with our audience as well. And please, for everyone that's listening, go and check out Ollie online, obviously on social, on the website as well, which is themetaproject.co, and then get involved in that 5-day challenge. And Ollie, if you can send me through that link, I'll put that up in the show notes for everybody as well as part of that. Final, just as a takeaway for everybody, two final questions, actually. One I was going to ask, which is, if I just did one thing, what's the one thing that you think is going to have the biggest impact? So that's my actual question. The second question is, what does an ideal morning routine look like? Is it from starting the day, what does that first 20, 30 minutes of the day look like? I think that would be a fantastic takeaway for the audience today. So I know that's meant to be one question, but it's actually two. I'd love to get your final thoughts on that.
Well, they're going to beautifully integrate into each other quite well, right? And if we're talking to the space of high-level execs, people that run their own business, and we start to get into the space of our mid-40s, we realize that we're becoming part of the statistic of, okay, I'm starting to see friends running into medical issues, and how do I make sure that I'm actually here for my kids? And when we start to have this conversation of 60% of heart attacks happen before 10 a.m., we can start to look at managing that morning routine to make sure we're not only being effective for today, but we're still here tomorrow. So looking at small changes you can make to your morning routine, rather than making it full of stress at the start of the day, it could be a case of actually unwinding and making a different routine. Because I know for myself, getting up, doing a 10-minute, roughly a 10-minute meditation, diving into a workout, really pushing the body and having that challenge before the day starts allows me to feel alive. I came from a rowing background, so just feeling like I've done more than most people before they get up is always a great space to start for me. And then diving into morning meetings. But as I get older and as I'm getting an awareness of the stress that comes along with that space, I'm getting an awareness of how high that cortisol spike is in the morning, and I just run through to lunchtime with that stress. Now, that's not necessarily effective for my health long term, but it's really going to be a case of how do I naturally wake up, and what's going to be a nice place for me to start right now? Am I someone that likes to have a nice morning routine? Am I going to look at journaling, meditation, going for a quick walk and grounding? Is it going to be a case of simply getting in a good breakfast so I'm starting the day properly, rather than the cereal and oats that we find ourselves slumping by 10 a.m. with, right? It's fueling the day with some of those calmer, more looking after myself responses. But taking the time to simply add in breath, movement, and fuel is a really nice way of doing it. It's ultimately just going to come down to your personality type, the way you structure your life, to realize, is that more of a challenge space where we work out in the morning and we do more of the unwinding at night? Or is it a case of taking the time to slowly build up with some time for reflection, for some time for reading, whatever that might be? I think it doesn't necessarily have to fit everyone into the same spot. But I think the one common trend that comes into that is it's all about you before the day starts. And that's 100% okay, right? Because we focus on kids, we focus on family. Some of us even watch the news or look at emails before the day start. Like, we've just guaranteed to fuck up our day. So taking the time to look at how leaning into us for a minimum of 20 minutes before the day starts allows us to really build that day and build the momentum from there. And whatever that looks like for you, breaking that down into a couple of different steps that really feel good is a pretty good place to start.
Fantastic. Great wisdom, great advice, Ollie. I appreciate your time deeply today. Thank you so much for everything. And for everyone that's listening and connecting in, please go and check out Ollie's work. Of course, we'll put all the show notes up for everybody as well. Ollie, thank you for being part of the show. I really appreciate it.
Awesome questions, dude. It always rows well when you've got a great host on board. So thank you.
You're welcome, mate. All the best.
This episode was brought to you by The Meta Project, an industry leaders in smarter health and performance. Thanks for tuning in. Don't take your attention lightly. If you love this episode, it'd be a massive help if you could just share with one friend who you feel would benefit. If you want to check out more from us, then just search Ollie Wood on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. We'll see you next time. Stay sharp.